Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. Israel says 10 of the 15 Palestinian protesters killed by Israeli gunfire Friday were documented terrorists who tried to sneak across the border. That violence along the Gaza Strip was the deadliest day between the Israelis and Palestinians since 2014. More than 1,400 people were wounded. Israeli Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman said Israel will not cooperate with any independent investigation into the violence. Meantime, a group of Israeli and Arab protesters demonstrated in Tel Aviv Sunday for a peaceful solution to the conflict. Avraham Berg is the former head of the Israeli parliament.
The demonstration here is a hope, one among many, that eventually will persuade both the government and the public opinion that defense is important, but peace offensive is much more significant.
Gaza's leaders have planned a six-week protest pressing for the right of return for Palestinian refugees and their descendants to their former land in Israel. Witnesses and officials say Al-Shabaab fighters launched coordinated attacks on five military camps in Somalia's Lower Shabelle region, killing at least 12 militants and a civilian. The deputy governor of Lower Shabelle, Ali Noor Mohammed, tells VOA's Somali service that AMISOM and Somali troops have repulsed all attacks. Also in the news, 18 people, including four civilians, were killed. Happened in three separate incidents Sunday as Indian troops conducted counterinsurgency operations in Indian Kashmir. All of this happened south of Srinagar. This is VOA News. The last rebel holdout in Syria's eastern Ghouta region, Jais al-Islam, appears ready to leave under an agreement ending the last resistance to a weeks-long Russian-backed government bombardment of the eastern suburbs of Damascus. Meantime, U.S. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham counseled President Trump against withdrawing U.S. forces from Syria. Graham appeared on the program Fox News Sunday.
If we withdrew our troops anytime soon, ISIS would come back, the war between Turkey and the Kurds would get out of hand, and you'd be giving Damascus to the Iranians without an American presence, and Russia and Iran would dominate Syria. It'd be the single worst decision the president could make. We got ISIL on the ropes. You don't let them off the ropes, remove American soldiers.
Last week, President Trump indicated the U.S. would be out of Syria very soon. Now that he says the Islamic State is defeated. Nobel Prize winner Malala Yousafzai today ends her first visit to Pakistan since being shot in her home village in 2012 by Taliban militants who tried to kill her for promoting girls' education in the country's northwest. Yousafzai says she plans to permanently return to Pakistan after completing her studies in Britain at Oxford University. China's Tiangong-1 space module re-entered the Earth's atmosphere. It happened early today and broke up over the southern Pacific. Gregory Kalaki is a China space analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists in Nanjing.
It was their first spacecraft that they're using to develop the technologies to build their space station. I think that's important. This isn't a space station. It's been called that even in the New York Times, but it's just a spacecraft.
Tiangong-1, launched in 2011, was a bus-size 8.5-ton craft that was the first generation of what is expected to be a permanent Chinese orbiting space station. Contact with the craft was lost in 2016. China has announced it's imposing tariffs on nearly 130 American products beginning today in response to last month's decision by the Trump administration to impose duties on imported steel and aluminum. U.S. said it also is preparing duties on tens of millions of dollars of Chinese products. Gordon Holden is a China expert at the University of Alberta.
That doesn't mean that we have to go through the full course of a trade war, but certainly at this point, there have been salvos in two directions now. First, President Trump, in effect, putting the threat of trade sanctions out there, although there's a comment period. And now with the Chinese hitting back, albeit with a smaller package.
Holden suggests that might be a signal China does not relish a full-blown trade war with the U.S. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, the second day of April, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote counting. Saturday's Sierra Leone runoff election continues with both sides predicting victory.
The SLPP has actually maintained a decisive commanding lead in this pool so far that we have been able to tally. So we are very confident that retired Brigadier Julius Madabio is winning this election, and certainly the SLPP will form the next government.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the Sierra Leone People's Party. A spokesman for the ruling All People's Congress Party says the party's candidate is in the lead. A U.S. court has summoned former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and others for their alleged roles in the country's civil war. And Zambia asked the Cuban ambassador, Cuba, to recall its ambassador to Lusaka.
An opposition party called the Socialist Party was being announced, and the ambassador went to attend without notification of the foreign ministry, which is a requirement. The ambassador made a speech pledging full support to the opposition party that was being formed.
Imochanda is the spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu, and Botswana's new president was sworn in on Sunday with a pledge to fight unemployment. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting. Saturday's Sierra Leone runoff election continues. Official announcement of the final results by the National Electoral Commission is not expected for another 2 days because the votes are being counted manually to avoid the alleged fraud that marred the first round vote. But already, both the ruling All People's Congress APC party and the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party SLPP have been predicting victory. Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the Sierra Leone People's Party. He says SLPP candidate, retired Brigadier Julius Madabio, has taken a commanding lead, according to results from the SLPP Vote Tallying Center.
The SLPP is doing extremely well in the votes. So far, the SLPP Tallying Center have tallied over 80% of the valid votes cast, which is about 2,052,000 votes. And out of the 2,052,000 votes we have tallied, the APC has scored 949,741, amounting to 46.2%. While the SLPP has actually scored 1,102,259, amounting to 53.7%, the SLPP has actually maintained a decisive commanding lead in this pool so far that we have been able to tally. So we are very confident that retired Brigadier Julius Madabio is winning this election, and certainly the SLPP will form the next government.
Mr. Lima, I saw your social media posting, and it says here that Brigadier Julius Madabio wins presidential runoff elections in Sierra Leone. Isn't that misleading, because the Elections Commission has yet to even announce the result?
Well, I have not posted Brigadier Bio wins. If you look at the caption, it's that SLPP maintains commanding lead in the elections. And wherever I may have used one, it's a prediction that from all of the analysis given, it is certain that the SLPP will emerge the winner of these elections. So from the previous post I did this morning before the statistical analysis coming, has been a projection or a prediction. And even beneath that post, I also reserve the exclusive responsibility of announcing election results to the constitutionally set up body, which is the National Electoral Commission. If you look at the initial post I did this morning that bears my name, where I talked about a projection of about 55%, beneath that there is a paragraph talking about the National Electoral Commission having the constitutional responsibility to announce results, and calling on our membership to exercise the level of patience for the National Electoral Commissions to come out with the results. At least we have been able to maintain and conduct ourselves within the framework of the law, and we have not done anything that will mislead the public. What is happening at the moment as I speak to you is the fact that the APC has seen the writings clearly on the wall that they have lost this election.
Lihai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. A spokesman for Sierra Leone's ruling All People's Congress, APC party, says the APC candidate and former Foreign Minister Samura Kamara has a comfortable lead as vote counting continues in Saturday's presidential runoff election. Abdoulaye Berete, spokesman for President Ernest Bai Koroma and also head of media campaign for the APC, downplayed claims by SLPP candidate retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio that bullets had been fired towards his residence by President Ernest Bai Koroma's protection officers. Berete accused Mada Bio of making over-exaggerated claims to gain public sympathy.
The only results that the National Electoral Commission released were the ones I indicated for Western Rural, whereby they even came with a tabulation that the Sierra Leone People's Party was able to get about 65,656 votes, and the All People's Congress Party had 99,229 votes. These were the official results released from the National Electoral Commission that I'm quoting for you, which gives us about 34,000 plus lead over the SLPP, and that is for the Western Rural. Upcountry, the results are trickling in, and they are being tabulated at the district tally centers. So all of this, for us as a party, we are in a very comfortable lead. And this is also coming against the backdrop that some ballot stuffing had been reported in Kamain, Kenema, and Bo District, which are two traditional strongholds of the opposition. So if that be the case, it is also going to play to the advantage of the All People's Congress Party.
What can you tell us, Mr. Berete, that some gunmen opened fire near the home of retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio? How true is that?
I cannot say anything apart from what I heard Julius Mada Bio said on the radio when he was interviewed. He said they fired a gunshot in the air, and when there was an altercation between his own security men and the security men of his neighbor, who happens to be the Minister of Trade, rather, Mali Momodu Patso. And he said already they informed the IG and the Chief of Defense Staff, and a checkpoint was dismantled. But other people had also indicated that it was an exaggeration on the part of Bio, the reason being he wanted to canvass public sympathy. And people were saying that public sympathy was not going to translate into votes. So far, that has been, and the police has been very clear that the situation has been put under control, but it was overly exaggerated.
The concern that some people are raising, because as you know, on election day, there were some military people in the streets. I think the election commission stopped the movement of personal vehicles in the street during the election day. People think that this might have contributed to whatever turnout was there during election day on Saturday.
Well, I must say, though, the National Electoral Commission even requested for the military and the police presence, because in a meeting where they updated His Excellency the President, they said their own expertise is to conduct elections. When it comes to providing security, they will encourage the government to provide adequate security.
Abdoulaye Berete is the spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma and also head of media campaign for the ruling APC party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, the second day of April. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. The former chair of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the TRC, is welcoming a civil lawsuit filed in the Federal District Court of Boston, Massachusetts, against former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf for her alleged role as international fundraiser for Charles Taylor's former rebel National Patriotic Front of Liberia. The plaintiff in the lawsuit is one Reverend Ma Coley Crowell, a Liberian and diversity U.S. citizen residing in Massachusetts. Neither the Liberian government nor a spokesperson for former President Sirleaf were immediately available for comment. But President Sirleaf reportedly told a local radio station last week that she did nothing wrong during the Liberian Civil War to be charged with war crimes. Former TRC chairman Jerome Verdier says the lawsuit is a reminder to African leaders to govern well so that when they leave power, there will be no need for accountability.
I welcome the very idea of holding people accountable for their stewardship in Liberia and for their political actions. I think it is very, very welcome, and that is an effort all justice activists support around the world.
When you were chairman, when you headed the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, did President Sirleaf come before your commission?
Yes, President Sirleaf. It was difficult getting her to appear, but she eventually did. She had her time and her day at the commission.
And because the allegations here in the lawsuit is that her involvement in the civil conflict, she has said that she did nothing wrong during the Liberian Civil War to be charged with war crimes or crimes against humanity.
Well, that is the former president's belief, that sponsoring a war effort that killed over 200,000 Liberians is justifiable, that being involved in sponsoring a war effort that destroyed the country and polarized it at different levels is justifiable and it is not wrong. But we think differently. Those are immoral acts that are wrong by any estimation. Whatever her pursuit at the time, whether it was pursuit for the morality or pursuit of vengeance against the Liberian people, or what, in whatever term it is, over 200,000 people died. More than 1 million were displaced. The country's institutions have been destroyed. At the TRC, she said she supported Mr. Taylor with $10,000 for humanitarian purposes. In the estimation of the TRC, she lied to the TRC. We had evidence of greater support that she gave towards the war effort. During Charles Taylor's testimony, he said she was more than just a fund giver. She was the principal fundraiser for the MPFL. And during her testimony at the United States Congress, her support for the war effort was very, very explicit. She called on the international community through the U.S. Congress to give full support to Charles Taylor. And additionally, she welcomed the recruitment of Charles Sulius. She said thousands of children were volunteering to fight the Charles Taylor war. That is a war crime in itself, to support the recruitment of children into armed services. So because she lied to the TRC, she tried to minimize her role and participation in that war effort. The TRC found her liable in the way we did. And she has failed to make any progress on the recommendations of the TRC, especially her appearance before the Palava Hut. So she now stands in the category of all the others who were accused of war crimes.
This is one concern that people have, and they say that maybe this is why some African leaders don't want to leave power, because when they leave power, these kinds of things happen.
On the reverse, I think African leaders who are in power should be conscious of their actions. They should be mindful of the will of the people. They should be mindful to govern well, so that when they leave, there will not be issues of this kind against them.
Jerome Verdier is the former chair of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. He was speaking with me from South Africa. Mongwitsi Masisi was sworn in Sunday as the new president of Botswana. He takes over from Ian Khama, who stepped down after 10 years in office. The constitution prevents Khama from seeking additional terms after serving his 2 5-4-year terms. The new president will remain in office until next year, when elections are held in Botswana. He currently faces a huge task to reduce Botswana's overdependence on the diamond trade, while creating more jobs to reduce the high youth unemployment. For a reaction to the swearing-in of the new Botswana president. VOA's Peter Clotty reached Kiliboga Dehutsu, a Botswana broadcast journalist in the capital, Gaborone.
There's a lot of excitement. I mean, there's no doubt about that. We're excited. I don't think it's so much to do with us thinking, you know, it could have been a coup, it happens anywhere different in Africa. I don't think that's the issue, really. I think under Ian Khama, we are dealing with a very authoritative figure. Now, you're not saying authoritarian, it's just authoritative figure, someone who just basically hands down instructions. As you see, it's a bit of a different character. He tends to be more consultative, he tends to be a bit more laid back, listens in, Farage himself with a very big team of, you know, advisors. Already the people he's been talking to, unions, media, you know, he's been bringing in a lot of people to try and appreciate what the real issues are going forward. And I don't think there's any doubt that he's going to be, at the very least, a listening president, as opposed to a gentleman who believed to be a very bad people and yet to have our bottoms, you know, beaten up.
Kialiboha, with a population of 2 million, a jobless rate of around 20%, with a high youth unemployment rate, do people feel that the new president has what it takes to resolve some of these challenges?
We, however, do believe that he does have what it takes. Like I said, he listens. He's been consulting everyone. He's been spending the last 3 months talking to almost all the sectors, you know. He's been talking to the finance sector, talking to, you know, the agriculture sector, education. He's a former educator himself. So the issue is we do believe that he has what it takes to actually get things going. He was responsible for job creation and a poverty eradication program in Botswana. So we think he has an appreciation of what the problems are. Whether he'll manage to do it in 18 months, mind you, he's going to be president for 18 months, unless and until, well, we do believe he'll win in 2019. And then from there, that's when we'll really get to appreciate what is it that he really sets out to do.
Kialiboha, when he was sworn in, he made an overture that he plans to win Botswana from its overdependence on diamond. Do you think he has time to put in measures to really implement those policies to win Botswana off over-dependence of diamonds, as he stated?
Well, there's nothing special about saying that. All the presidents have said that in the past, so I didn't take it serious. It's actually one of those issues that I basically ignored when he was discussing it. But is it possible for Botswana to win itself of that? We don't have a choice. We are running out of diamonds, and obviously with the coming of artificial diamonds and all that, the reality is that we'll no longer be having, and diamonds are not going to be income earners for our country in the next quarter of a century. It's the reality we are dealing with now. So it doesn't take a genius to realize that we need another income earner, another revenue earner as a country. So it's not a question of whether he can do it or not. It's a question of he has to do it. If he doesn't, somehow something will step in, probably at a lower rate or at a higher rate. But it's no longer an issue now. We've accepted that mining, specifically diamonds, are not going to be taking care of us going forward. He's made clear of that. So it's not even an issue as far as you're concerned here. You just think anybody who takes over ought to be able to deal with that stuff going forward.
Kialiboha Dehutsu is a Botswana broadcast journalist. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Gaborone. Zambia has asked Cuba to recall its ambassador to Lusaka. Amos Chanda, spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu, says the ambassador openly supported the newly launched opposition socialist party.
The Cuban ambassador has crossed a diplomatic red line, I should put it. An opposition party called the Socialist Party was being announced, and the ambassador went to attend without notification of the foreign ministry, which is a requirement. Further than that, the ambassador made a speech pledging full support to the opposition party that was being formed. At that point, his position became untenable because all ambassadors and high commissioners accredited to the Republic of Zambia do engage in intimate business communication and transaction between themselves and the Republic of Zambia. We cannot see how we can trust him that he was presenting his credentials to the president only on Thursday. And now he pledges loyalty and support to the opposition party.
What is the difference between the Cuban ambassador attending an event that is put up by the government of Zambia and he attending the launch of an opposition political party? Isn't that the same?
It's not the same. The government of the Republic of Zambia is different from a political party. When we call an ambassador, for instance, at the launch of a project to deal with climate change and other things, that's a government. You will share information as government to government. How is he going to transmit information about, because the purpose of that opposition party, as announced there, is to instigate a revolution to remove the government of the Republic of Zambia. Is that the transaction the ambassador of Cuba wants to transmit between Havana and Lusaka?
Did your government also deport 9 foreign nationals for attempting to enter Zambia to witness the launch of this party? Did you deport anybody?
No, there was no deportation of anybody who had the right to be in Zambia. The visa restrictions on any country like me are in my passport, even as I am a senior government official. When my passport to the United States expires in June, and I'm required to come to the United States in July, I will not be allowed to enter the United States because I do not have a visa.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Easter Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the Commonwealth Games, and with less than 2 days to go to the opening ceremony of the Games in Gold Coast, Australia, the indefinite suspension of transfer allegiance by the International Association of Athletics Federation, IWAF, has stopped British-born Nigeria high jumper Mike Edwards from representing the country at the Gold Coast 2018 Commonwealth Games. The IWAF said the fees was largely for the purpose of protecting vulnerable African athletes from being poached by other nations. However, the 27-year-old Edwards, who is a part of the 37-man athletics team already in the Gold Coast, took to the social media Friday to protest the decision of the World Athletics Body in preventing him from representing Nigeria at the Commonwealth Games. We stay with athletics as Zimbabwean Justin Kimboi Cheseri is the winner of the 49th edition of the Two Oceans Marathon in Cape Town, South Africa. In the women's category, the first place was claimed by South Africa's Grenda Steyn.
I'm so happy to be here today and in first position. It's a dream come true. 2 years ago, I was 14th place. I didn't run last year. Unfortunately, I had to miss that one. But I've seen a lot of improvement in the last 2 years, and I'm just so grateful to be here today in first position.
Olympic 5,000 meters champion Vivian Cheruiyot has said she will only retire if she wins the marathon gold in Tokyo 2020. Vivian Cheruiyot says she believes that the 2020 Tokyo Olympics will give her a perfect opportunity to bow out in style after a stellar career. Cheruiyot is also preparing for this year's London Marathon later this month, where she will be facing defending champion Mary Kitiani.
Now I have graduated to longer distance as the year has gone by. I hope to do an Olympic in marathon before I hang my spikes.
And now to cricket news. South Africa cricket national team, the Proteas, surged into a powerful position in the fourth test against Australia on Sunday. They finished the third day on 134 for 3 in their second innings, an overall lead of 401. Keshav Maharaj is a left-arm spinner for the Proteas of South Africa.
As conditions would say, yes, but I think collectively as a team, we've bowled well together in the series, so yeah, there'll be a lot of emphasis on the spin, but I actually think it's turning and bouncing too much to actually find an edge or anything like that. But we'll take it on our stride.
In football news, in Uganda, the national under-20 coach Stanley Okumbi, who was recently demoted from the senior national team, has laid blame on his players after Rwanda scored an injury-time goal to secure a vital 1-1 draw in the first round, first leg AFCON under-20 qualifier played in Machakos. Vincent Mashami, coach of Rwanda under-20, said he told his boys during the halftime break that they could win the match, which eventually paid off. That's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Monday, April 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a good week.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.